and welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. My name's Dave Stevens. I'm a B2B marketer and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of B2B marketing professionals and people interested in B2B marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. Today, we've got over 1,000 participants across the world. But if this is the first time you've joined us, well, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. Of course, if you've been with us before, we welcome you as well. Welcome back. It's really good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be speaking to Annabelle Rake, the CMO of Deloitte, for some career advice on surviving and thriving in a difficult environment. Plus, managing partner of DMA Partners, Philip Martin, talks about copywriting. Freelance marketing consultant AO Abbas shares a key lesson that she's taken on her marketing journey. And marketing director at Clear, Geraint Jones, celebrates some great business marketing. Lots to cover, so let's get started. Building yourself a career in business marketing can be tough, particularly in the light of the COVID crisis. I'm joined by Annabelle Rake, who is the CMO of Deloitte, for some advice on surviving and thriving in a difficult environment. Annabelle, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Good to be here.
It's good to have you. So before we dive into that, tell us a bit about what's top of mind at Deloitte right now.
I think what's top of mind for us is what's top of mind for our clients. So, you know, obviously there is a bit of a world remade out there at the moment, isn't there? We very busy trying to think about how we help our clients through that, whether that's how they might build trust, strengthen their resilience, or indeed drive the transformation of their business. And different clients will be in different places. So yeah, that's a big focus for us at the moment. I think internally, you know, we are looking at a number of different things around our purpose, diversity and inclusion, especially in response to some of the terrible events of earlier this year with the killing of George Floyd. So those areas have got some big focus as well for us internally.
Okay. Let's move away from the big picture to a marketing picture then. Do you agree that the business marketing environment can be a particularly tough space in which to build your career? And if so, why?
I think it probably depends on the sort of organisation that you're in the B2B space. I think certainly in professional services, where I work, and I know you've spent some of your time, I think it can be very challenging. You know, in many organisations, marketers, I think, are the voice of the client, the voice of the customer. And of course, that is still true in professional services firms. But certainly when you're in an organisation of experts, it can be challenging as a marketer, because the people that you are engaging with internally, they have the relationships with the end client, and you're trying to influence them to perhaps act differently or take something out to that end client. And you know, very often that they can be quite challenging. So within a partnership particularly, our partners can be very challenging of some of the things we do in marketing. And you know, I think you have to love that to be in professional services, to work in a partnership. You have to love that way of working and really thrive when you get that challenge rather than be daunted by it. So yeah, I think it can be a challenging place to work.
I love that you have to you have to thrive on it, and you have to embrace it. So that being the case, what skills and qualities do you need to get on in B2B marketing within that context?
I think you have to be, I always say to people when they join our team, you have to be really curious, especially in a large organization like Deloitte. You have to be really curious about what we do, why we do it, how that is progressing. I talked about some of the issues our clients are facing. You have to be curious about that. You have to really care about that. And, you know, you have to want to get up in the morning and read the news and find out what the big issues of business are. Otherwise, you can't do a good job in terms of taking your own firm to market. I think it's very hard if you just don't have that general natural curiosity in terms of what's going on. And, you know, against the backdrop that I talked about of having many experts in the firm, I think, you know, you have to have good stakeholder management capability and skills. And, you know, of course, we always look for technically skilled marketers in whatever field of marketing it is that we are hiring or promoting. We are looking for those technical skills, but someone that has those in abundance but doesn't have good stakeholder management will not get on well in our organization. You know, you need to have that ability to engage, to influence, to persuade. So yeah, I think those sorts of qualities really in B2B have to come to the fore, as well as the sort of hygiene factor of some of the core technical marketing skills.
And so you talked about curiosity as being a kind of natural thing. So let me put that to one side. I'm guessing the Annabelle Regg view of the world is you either have that or you don't. So let's look to the other elements, the stakeholder management that you talked about, the persuasion elements that you talked about. How can others go about acquiring that skill set?
I think, you know, if I think about the sort of history of my career, it's thinking about the connections that you've got and the relationships that you've got with people and learning from others. I certainly believe in training courses and things like that to help you develop your skills, but I think you learn best on the job. And I think that generally is that you're learning from other people and you're learning by doing. So I think you have to be brave. You have to put yourself in the situations and go and have a go at it. You know, you have to seek out the people that are really good at it in your organization, or indeed outside in your network. And get them to help you think about how you might approach certain situations. You know, have a good mentor, a good buddy. Those sorts of relationships, I think, are really crucially important. Yes, you can go on the training course. Yes, you can do the e-learning. All of those things, I think, are helpful building blocks. But for me, there's no substitute for going and actually doing and learning through doing. And the relationships that you have with other people to help you in that are really important.
But then here comes, it's kind of going back to almost the top of the interview where you were talking about how Deloitte was thinking about COVID. So here comes COVID, and all of a sudden, I guess, you know, we're doing this interview over Zoom, and we've been talking about Teams and Google and all of those other things as well. So I'm guessing that the way that you do stakeholder management now is different to the way you might have gone about doing it before. And I'm wondering whether that's kind of changed what stakeholder management actually involves.
Yeah, I think, you know, gone are the water cooler moments, right, that you used to have when you saw people in the office. And that might be where you would find out that little nugget of information that you then use in your next meeting or your next conversation with somebody. And, you know, I think, In many ways, the technology is actually, in some ways, democratized meetings, right? So you'd go to a meeting previously, there might be a sort of power base in the room, and you could see that playing out physically. Yeah. You know, on Zoom, everybody is the same size on the screen. You know, everybody's got that challenge about, oh, I need to get my point in, and when do I speak? And, you know, they're all very equal. Every person on a Zoom call could be equal. So I think, you know, use some of that to your advantage, definitely, on that stakeholder management point. But you do have to, I think you have to plan it in a bit more than perhaps when we were in the physical world.
And then from a formalized, doesn't it, I suppose?
Yeah. And I think you have to give yourself permission to have a bit of that social conversation, because actually a lot of stakeholder influence is based on relationships. And the relationships that you used to build when you were on the way to the coffee shop, or if you popped out for lunch with somebody, where you got the kind of the personal story and the personal background to someone. You know, it's those things that are challenging at the moment, and you have to give yourself permission to still do those things. You know, that as a marketer, I think, is still part of your role. It's still building that stakeholder relationship. And, you know, asking people about how they're doing and finding out about what's going on outside of work, they're all really critical things still that, you know, if you don't naturally do that again, you kind of have to make yourself do it and perhaps write it down on your notepad to, you know, to ask somebody a bit about them and remember what you talked about last time. It's really simple things, but so crucially important to do in the kind of digital virtual world.
And what about the persuasion side of things that you talked about earlier? Has that changed too in the light of COVID?
I think the persuasion side, it's really interesting thinking about, you know, marketing insight and data now. You know, everything being digital now, I think that gives marketers a really interesting position to be able to take. Arguably, we should have more data and insight at our fingertips than ever before. And certainly I've been using this way more in some of the exec meetings that I've been part of to really help our leaders understand what it is that is important in the market. What are people searching for? What are people talking about on social in terms of certain topics and things like that? How can we use that to really drive our own market content and positioning? And of course, those are things that we would have been doing prior to COVID-19 and the crisis, but I think they have become even more important in this very virtual world that we're living in. So in terms of that persuasion, it's really understanding that insight, that analysis that you have as a marketer at your fingertips and how you can then use that in those conversations with stakeholders to help persuade that perhaps the thing that you want to do is the right thing to do. You've got some data there to back it up.
That's brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing that insight. Annabel Raik, CMO of Deloitte. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
It's said that if there's one marketing skill that you should focus upon above all others, it's copywriting. So why is it so important? I'm joined by Philip Martin, who is managing partner of DMA Partners. Philip, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks very much, Dave. Really pleased to be here, and thanks again for the invitation.
It's good. No, it's good to have you. So, but before we get into copywriting, tell me a bit about DMA.
Sure. DMA Partners is a creative and communication agency. We've been in business for over 15 years now. We've had some great clients ranging from large international companies to the smaller growth companies, primarily B2B. We believe a deep understanding of our clients' business and objectives definitely key to delivering what we think is amazing work. And good branding, as you know, on B2B has the power to engage people in an emotional way. From the initial idea to final execution, we use our creative expertise and knowledge to bring your business or the B2B business and messages to life. We do have particular expertise in technology and travel. So we've been pretty stung this year with COVID, telecoms, legal and professional services. And also we are in the fintech as well. And we've got some great successful projects completed also on a B2C perspective as well, which gives us that balance. And, you know, things range from project brand refreshes. We do video, website design, copy, all sorts of marketing strategy. And basically, we pride ourselves on channeling that deep expertise we've got to deliver exceptional business results for the clients. Now, we've just been recently shortlisted for the Champions of Customer Experience in the December 2020 Travolution Awards. So we're very excited at the moment, David.
Well, I'm pleased that you're excited. I'm excited for you as well. But I'm going to deviate away from your award-winning or award-nominating ways. Yes. And talk a bit about copywriting, if I may.
Sure.
And it strikes me that, first of all, we probably should define, shouldn't we, what copywriting actually means.
Yes. I mean, it's putting together a string of words, really, that I mean, very simple, isn't it, really, that create the feeling or emotion that you are seeking from the individual. Usually it's to make them feel, think, or act differently from the way that they did before. For me, it's really the heart and soul of any marketing campaign. It's the bridge between the person reading the copy to the product or service you are trying to sell. It's a very special job and at times very rewarding. I mean, if you take, for example, I've got a box in front of me. I got a present recently, which was a Segway ride. And, you know, if you sort of presented it, ever wanted to try riding a Segway, I think the emotion I would feel at the beginning is, oh dear, crash, grazed knees and bandaged hands. But if you sort of said, you know, ever wanted to, the exhilarating feeling of speed and the great adrenaline rush, then try riding a Segway. So I think you picture something differently, and that's what copy's all about, isn't it?
It sure is. So you define it as something quite special, but is it the most important marketing skill?
I think it is. It's a craft. Most ideas start with an image, but it's how you convert that into text. It needs to create an empathy with the target person rather than just explaining, you know, what a product or a service is. And you really need that hook, you know, what's in it for me? And if you want to differentiate yourselves from the competition, then you need to be able to have that empathy with something that solves their key problem. It's got to create that emotion. And they would like, you know, and would they like to get in touch with you because of that emotion that they feel based on just simply text? But I really believe that's the thing that sort of turns heads and gets people interested in what you're selling.
So you've sold me on that, and also I think you talked there a bit about the benefits of great copy. But how should businesses go about writing good copy?
There are lots of things that I could say, but I think I'd like to try and stick to three important areas. First and foremost, it's research. Now, it's important because who's the copy for? And you go down to this thing about defining the persona right from the start. What that means is you will get copy that will resonate with the person it was intended for and their particular problem. So you know you can do this by checking articles and other things such as interviews on YouTube at events, all sorts of things that basically starts to build that persona for you. The other thing is learn about your product or service. Find out what the product is you are writing about. Try it out, get a demo, see how it's being used in everyday business. Be surprised how many people just write things based on what other people are telling them within the company. But if you actually try that yourself, you start to feel what it means to that individual, and then start listing the features and benefits of for the individual. If you can be the ears and eyes of the persona, then what's in it for them? You know, you're really going to deliver some cool copy, and also you'll start to figure out what that real headline is. And the other thing, check on competition. So in research, which is the first piece, check on that competition. What are your USPs? Are they really USPs? And have a look at what key challenges you can see as well. Now, the second thing is, what is the copy going to be used for? Now, that might seem simple, but at the same time, is that communication channel the right communication channel for your persona? And make sure, you know, that you've written the right copy for a website, whether it's sort of video or print, et cetera, and you'll find that they will be different. And then finally, just keep it short, simple, something easy to digest, and keep away from jargon. I mean, Dave, how many times have we seen artificial intelligence or blockchain as a key message, like you will engage a company just because they have AA or BC? I mean, find out what makes you special compared to others, really.
That's really interesting, because the way you kind of frame that, you know, of your three things, it's only really the last one, which is about writing. The other two are kind of before you put pen to paper or start typing to really do your background work, as it were. So which businesses do you think do this well at the moment?
Well, I can't think of many. There aren't that many that stand out. I mean, because of the job that we've got, you know, I'm asked to look at a lot of different tech companies And they sort of say, you know, can you look at these companies that we're working for? What is it that you sticks out that you can't do? And nine times out of 10, they're basically describing their products. It's very difficult in B2B because, and I've been down through this road having worked for a corporation, is that too many people get involved with editing copy, which is why it's very difficult for a business. So what happens is the message gets diluted as more people add their bits. The copywriter loses his or her grasp on the initial meaning or the direction, and they always forget who the end person is. Yeah. Now, many people have to make sure of their piece of the pie in the copy. Sometimes you get 20 rounds, so there'll be 20 different people that are actually putting their 5 pence worth into the copy. And then you get features being added to the copy, which at the end of the day, the target audience is not interested in. And rather becoming copy for the target individual, it starts to become copy to please either the product manager or the CEO and so on. So I think people who are writing copy, it's from the marketing department, they have to be stronger and then go back to what we just talked about, which is what is the persona, who are you writing for?
It's great advice. Philip Martin, Managing Partner of DMA Partners. Thank you very much.
Pleasure.
Next up, Ayo Abbas shares a key lesson that she's taken on her career journey to becoming a marketing consultant. Ayo, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you today?
I'm pretty good for a Friday, you know that.
That's very good to hear. So, first of all, tell us a bit about what you're up to in your kind of marketing consultant world right now.
So I am a marketing consultant. I've been working for myself for about a year now, and I specialize in the built environment. So that's working with architects, engineers, contractors, all kind of in that kind of B2B kind of construction thing or field. So yeah, so that's what I've been doing really. So, and then I broadly work in terms of strategy and planning and content creation and campaigns, because that's what I love to do really.
Great. So here comes the $1 million question. What's made you, AO, the brilliant B2B marketer that you are today?
That question did stump me a bit. I was like, brilliant, huh? But in terms of thinking about it, I think one of my qualities has always been about being quite practical and getting stuck in. I thought, you know, how do I phrase this? But that's probably the best way. So, you know, when I started my business probably a year ago, one of the first things I actually did was actually, I heard this on a different podcast where they said, you know, write to some of the people you know and ask them your three strengths and why, you know, what makes you special, basically. So I sent this to a number of my friends and my family and people I've worked with. And then I put them all into a table and analyzed them. And it was kind of like all the practical and problem solving was something that came up a lot across all the kind of common threads in terms of what my skills are. And that was really good to hear it from a third party that wasn't me. And then the kind of, you know, just to kind of understand a bit more about myself from other people and how that looks. And so for me, you know, finding solutions, trying something else out if you hit a brick wall. And I guess as well, not being afraid to get your hands dirty. So, you know, for me, thinking about my first job, which was in PR, you know, I learned the basics. I had setbacks. I ran loads of events. You know, I was really getting stuck in and trying new things from scratch. And I think that's the kind of perseverance that you kind of have if you want to kind of have a marketing career and also to make it sustainable. So for me, that's one of the kind of key things that you need to have.
So kind of problem solving and perseverance then.
Yeah.
They both strike me as kind of fairly innate skills, i.e. you kind of either have them or you don't. Is that fair?
Yeah, I guess it is, isn't it? Because actually it's kind of who I am. So I'm like that in my personal life as well. But I kind of think that, but that's kind of ultimately, even, you know, you can layer the marketing skills on top, but who you are innately is who you are innately. Mm-hmm. And you know, yeah, that, I mean, those are skills I have in life, I guess, not just in marketing.
So I never thought I'd get the chance to be this deep and philosophical on this podcast, but here goes. So does that mean marketers are born rather than made?
Oh, I don't know. Are you a born marketeer? That's so interesting. I've never, ever thought of that question. But I don't know. Is it a mix of the two? I literally have never thought of that question, but Yeah, I guess there's some people who do go that academic route, don't they? And they go literally like they follow that this is what you do, this is the process. But then there's other people who will just be like, actually, practically A to B, this is how you get there and off you go. So I don't think there is. I think it's a mix, isn't it? Depends on that person and what your individual makeup is.
So there you are. That's a deep philosophical question. Something else. So I was interested.
It's hard.
I was interested in your going out to people and asking them for your key skills, because that's actually quite a courageous thing, I think, to do, because you know, you don't know what people are going to say. You know, will you agree with the skill?
But these are people that like me. I didn't go out to some... I went out to my enemies. No, I didn't. I went to people that like me.
Yes, they could still be saying things that you kind of vehemently disagree with.
Completely. That is true. But I guess you have to do these exercises when you're in the right headspace to do them, because you have to be open to what people are saying to you. You might not agree with them, but actually it's useful to, and you go out to a number of people, so it's not just one person, and you're looking for the trends and patterns. And I kind of think, and actually what's really weird is that when you look at it, you see the patterns of actually they're saying the same as that person and saying the same as that person, and it kind of just reinforces what you already know rather than coming out with something that's completely brand new to you. But I think it's just having it said by other people really does help you.
So when you got that list back, did you kind of, was it generally you're just kind, were you kind of effectively just looking for the ones that said the most common things and you built those up as being?
Yeah, I mean, because I'm a generalist marketer, and I think for me it was kind of like understanding which parts of what I do I'm best at, and that's why I did the exercise. Do you know what I mean? So it was kind of like, In my head, I think, you know, well, I enjoy writing, I enjoy doing plans, but I just wanted to kind of make sure that that's how other people kind of understood what I do, like my strengths. Yeah. So that's more, it was more of that reinforcement for me more than anything else. It wasn't necessarily, you're going to tell me something like brand new. It was more just making sure that I am going to be pushing the right things,
really,
the right parts of my skills. Yeah.
Really interesting. Well, look, thank you for taking us on a bit of your journey today. Ayo Abbas, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Dave.
There's some great business marketing out there, and I'm joined now by Geraint Jones, Marketing Director at Clear, to celebrate it. Welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me, Dave.
So first of all, tell me a bit about Clear.
So we're the global strategy consultancy part of the M&C Saatchi Group, and we specialise in growth for brand experience and innovation. We've been around for about 2 decades now. So 2002, we were founded, about $20 million business, and we work out of London as our headquarters, and then we're in New York, Dayton, Frankfurt, Shanghai, and Singapore. So right around the world in every time zone, and we operate in pretty much every market that you can think of. We're not just in those countries. I think the one thing you need to know about Clear is that we're a business that believes that clarity creates growth. And we use clarity as a tool to navigate a pathway through the sort of ridiculous complexities and chaos of our modern world. So from automation to data overload, the incredible pace of change we're all going through, we use clarity to really help senior marketing leaders to deliver the growth that they're tasked with.
Okay. And that means you're in a pretty special position to be able to tell us about great business marketing. What's caught your eye out in the market right now?
Oh, it's been a funny year, hasn't it? I mean, it's the sort of statement of the obvious, but it's been tough, particularly for business marketers. As one myself, I remember I came in. So I was on paternity leave from the 8th of March and then was due to come back on the 22nd, which I think was the day before we went into the first official horrific national lockdown here in the UK. So it was fun. And then it was even more fun that on the 23rd, I got a phone call, an all hands phone call across the group, where my CEO said to me, "Can you rewrite the marketing strategy by the end of the week?" To which there is only the answer, which is yes. And I don't think I'm alone. I think there's a lot of CMOs. I've talked to a lot of CMOs, a lot of B2B CMOs, this year on our Clear Conversations webinars, and also on the Points of Clarity series that we're running of interviews. And I think a lot of people have had their plans thrown up in the air. And I think what's been great this year, I think what's been great is the speed with which marketing leaders and their teams have been able to reorient themselves around the actual needs of the market right now. We all know how important live events and trade shows and conferences are to the B2B sector, and they have gone up in smoke. And actually, I think quite a lot, I feel very sad for a lot of those live event providers, because I think they've struggled fundamentally to create the value that we all want from them. And I think they've struggled to get the attendees and value that we would hope in those attendees to the equivalent virtual shows that they've been putting on. Having said that, what it's forced is marketing leaders and teams to reorient themselves around new requirements and new skills. I've seen some fantastic examples of webinars and podcasts kick off that have started rapidly. And I think there was a benefit to being one of the first movers. I think if you were late to the party, if you didn't start your webinar series until May or June, then I think you're probably still struggling to get audience. But if you were up in April and you were kicking things live and getting good audiences, I think you've probably seen an improvement in audience levels. I mean, we definitely have. And I think the greatest things I've seen have been a sort of a mixture of that. And also, I think the other thing I'd like to talk to is the humanity that we've seen come back into B2B. And it's been in a lot of situations quite accidental. And I'll go into that a little bit more. We're all in our houses now. I mean, I'm currently at my mother's house in the northeast of England, in a level one area, just for clarity. It depends on what the levels are right now when this goes out, but you'll know what I mean.
I would abandon that system by now and be on something else, I'm sure.
exactly. But we're in a place where you're seeing into your homes in a way that I don't think anyone expected. And in a business context, that means you're conducting your business relationships from home. You're conducting all of your sales opportunities. You're conducting your mid-funnel work. You're conducting all of your client entertainment, if you're still trying to do that. And there've been some great examples of people doing, cocktail hours that they've been sending out pre-made cocktail kits in the post. There've been people doing cook-alongs with senior clients just to create a different type of engagement. There's been some stupendous work that's brought humanity back into B2B in a big way. And I think you can see that in a number of areas. You can see that in all of this kind of clever work that's going on in ABM. But I think you can also see it in certain ad campaigns. There haven't been many, and I did have to go and do a bit of digging, but then it struck me that there's only been one that I've really fallen in love with. So it's a really obvious example, but the campaign I've really loved the most is probably the Apple campaign on work from home, which it's terrible to pick an Apple campaign. It always is. But it's a great example of this sort of authenticity, I guess, that we're talking about, where they've managed to do something very special. Very quickly, they were able to leverage their customer data about new behaviors that they were seeing at the beginning of the crisis. They were able to stand that up in a way and create it in a way that felt very authentic, very real, and very much like they were actually in it with us. And it did something quite powerful as well, which was it repositioned Apple as a working from home business and a business to support those who were working from home at a time when I think many of us still associate that brand with being a consumer brand that's focused entirely on iPhones and the odd Mac. So I think what's been really good for me about that is it sort of gives you a sense that brands are starting to realize that they can't just do the sort of we're all in this together campaign sort of stuff that we saw at the beginning of the crisis, which doesn't ring true, that doesn't feel like it's believable. Instead, brands have been smart enough to realize that they're able to get closer in home to people in all sorts of different contexts, whether it's in home through their account-based marketing, where we've seen things like cocktail hours through the post, or cooking alongs with Michelin star chefs to create that client engagement that's so difficult otherwise, or whether it's been a sort of situation where you see people engaging with their families at the same time as being on corporate conversations. We've all become more human and more approachable, and that's made the brands that we work for more human and approachable. And when a brand like Apple takes that to the next level and says, not only are we more human and approachable, but we're engaging with you and we understand what you're going through and we're demonstrating it, then that's hugely powerful. And I think that's what I've been really enjoying, is that brands, not just Apple, but brands in the B2B space in more general terms, have recognized that we're all humans working in a very compromised human way from our houses. And they have all decided to engage with us on a level and show their own human faces. And I think the more we can do that, the more we'll build proper emotional resonance, proper distinctiveness for B2B brands, and we will come out the other side in a better place.
To kind of be the change rather than just talk about it.
Absolutely. That is it in a nutshell.
Garen Jones, Marketing Director, Clear. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
And that's it. That's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Annabelle Rake, Philip Martin, Ayo Abbas and Garen Jones. Thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where that came from. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community run by business marketers for business marketers. And you can check out our other webinars, podcasts, events, mentoring, blogs, newsletters, social media groups, community groups and gatherings at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.